The following podcast is a live recording of a radio show first broadcast by Fresh FM with assistance from New Zealand On Air.
Welcome, listeners. Welcome to Hearth Tales on Fresh FM. Join me, Rich McCoy, as we gather closer to hear the tales of seasoned artists, makers, creative souls, and those who love to support them. Listen to stories of their journeys, how they wrestle with their demons, and how they balance their calling with the scaffolding of admin, life, and self-promotion.
Kia ora, Redwood, and welcome to the show. For those who may not be familiar with you, could you introduce yourself and share a little bit about your craft?
Sure. Kia ora. I'm Redwood Ryder. I'm a spoken word poet. I'm originally from California and a long-term import to Aotearoa, based in Mohoa, Golden Bay.
Wonderful. And so what first drew you to poetry and spoken word as your form of expression?
Well, I probably started writing poems when I was when I was a child. It was a way of expressing myself. I didn't always feel so resonant with the human world, so I'd go off in my own world and write poems. Yeah, and then I actually got into spoken word in my early 20s. I was really drawn to the slam poetry scene in California. I'd just gotten out of university, where I'd been surrounded by this very erudite concept of poetry, where the school literary magazines were full of all these poems with big words that I didn't even understand. And it was kind of like, well, what is poetry? Is it proving you're smarter than everyone else so that you can write such a complex poem that people have to really work to understand?
Yeah.
And so I sort of tailed off from my poetry practice when I was exposed to all that. But then when I was exposed to the spoken word scene, it was something really just ignited in me. And, slam poetry is this competition where people are judged on stage and given points for how they do their poems. And I think I'm a little bit too much of a sensitive flower for that, actually. But what was dynamic about that scene was that it forced people to connect with their audience. And I saw all these poets from all different cultural backgrounds, ethnicities, all coming into a shared space and just like breathing fire out of their experiences and being received. Just like the more real you were, the more you landed with people. And yeah, I think that ignited something in me that's been flowing ever since.
And is that what sort of set you firmly on that path? Or was there any other experiences that really resonated with you to going, this is what I must do?
Well, I like that. It's definitely a this is what I must do. And I've always had many projects in my life. One of the moments actually that really made me go, this is what I must do. It's funny. I went to get a master's degree in environmental science. And I was really, from an early age, I think I was very idealistic and really believed that someone knew the answers to the world's problems, or that I could figure them out, or that we could figure it out together and make everything better because things clearly weren't the way that they're supposed to be or could be or should be. And so I went to grad school for 2 years, and if anyone had known all the answers to how we were going to stabilize our relationship with the ecological systems all around us. There were so many professors and amazing people at that school, but no one told me the answers. You know, there were more questions. There were a lot of people doing amazing things, a lot of amazing ideas, and a lot of awesome things that we can do. But no one had like one answer for me. And then during that time, I would do poems at our school, talent shows and whatnot, and have like hundreds of my fellow students screaming for me. And then so they selected me as their graduation speaker, one of the graduation speakers, because I promised to do a poem. So I wrote this poem for my master's graduation. And I mean, the rhymes were probably, if I look back now, they were embarrassing, but there was one really good one. I remember where I said something like, we have to lean on each other to grow mental endurance. My true employer is the earth, even if it doesn't offer dental insurance. And I still don't have dental insurance. However, that moment, I had like all these hundreds of my peers looking back at me, and it was the most I'd ever felt I'd landed and connected with such a big group of people. And I had people just like shining their eyes back at me, just like so grateful, like I had encapsulated, you know, that was during the George W. Bush years.
Right.
And it was a hard time to care, you know, I know today might pale in comparison over there, but it was a hard time to believe in doing good things when so much was coming down from the government.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, being able to offer that seed of like inspiration and connection to all my fellow humans who are in it together, wanting to seed more beauty in this world. I was like, oh, this is really necessary. Like, we need poetry to connect us back, and I have a role here. So it's kind of funny. Basically, I went to go get a master's degree in environmental science and found out I needed to be a poet. Long story, but good ending.
Yeah, I mean, if that's how things flow, that's how they flow, isn't it? Which is great. And a lot of your poems seem to be quite rooted in the land, ecology, and community. So it doesn't surprise me that you have that environmental degree background. Is that where the inspiration comes from for you, or is that always in within you?
Yeah, a lot of it. I mean, I often write when I'm in nature. I'm inspired to write in nature. And I was just thinking about, you know, my most recent album. Like, it's called Changing My Mind, and it's not actually all about the natural world. But in every poem, there's some sort of nature metaphor. I feel like the natural world is like it's a language for me. It's like the tree roots and, you know, remind me how we're connected to each other and what sustains us. And, you know, the ocean often connects to emotion and, you know, being part of something vast. And, you know, it's like every drop of water is itself and is also the ocean. So I feel like all the nature imagery often helps me get closer to, like, yeah, to what we are.
And would you see your work as a dialogue between the natural world and people? And you feel that you're helping to sort of facilitate that?
Yeah, well, I suppose there is a dialogue between the natural world and people that's always happening. And maybe I'm more like a translator or a messenger, helping the connection be clear. Yeah, helping us listen.
And your work also seems to blend sort of art and activism quite a lot. How do these two strands come together for you?
Well, I mean, because I'm an activist, you know, and I think it can be really hard to fight for things in the world that we live in, you know, especially, you know, a lot of activists were either low paid or totally volunteer while trying to do other things to keep ourselves going. And, fighting often against really well-organized and well-funded corporate and political forces. So for myself, poetry has been like a way of, you know, I've always wrestled with this question of like, how do we keep going? Like, I truly believe we have so much power to change things, and social movements throughout history have shown that. And part of it is actually helping us all believe and recognize our own power. And so a lot of my poems have circled around that, like to help us connect to our power for change. And if I just wrote that, if I wrote an essay about it, that would be okay. But something about poetry can like reach in and, you know, just sort of gently touch people's hearts and sort of catch them off guard and find an opening when all the news and everything is causing us to want to shut down. So it's just been a natural thing I've done over time, whether it's, you know, writing a poem for some specific cause and performing at a protest, or sort of more, you know, I have an album called Sacred Activist, and that title comes from spiritual teacher Andrew Harvey, coined the term sacred activism. And when I heard that, something really went off in me. It's like, yeah, activism as a spiritual practice, because that's because it is sacred to work for good changes. And also we need to feed our spirits to keep going. So a lot of the poems have been around that.
Totally. Yeah, I hear what you're saying with regards to poetry. It speaks to the soul much more eloquently than any essay ever could. But yeah, there's a beauty there. Do you see your poetry as a form of protest or prayer or both, do you think?
I'm going to go with both.
Yeah.
Non-binary. The protest prayer. I love that. The prayer is a protest.
Yeah.
And the protest is often a prayer.
And it's, yeah, so deeply connecting as well. And I understand you once performed a poem at Te Papa that challenged the government policy. What role do you think that risk plays in that it engages with activism? That was a brave thing to do.
That was a singular, interesting moment on my path. I was invited to speak on a panel alongside the parliamentary commissioner for the environment and to speak about my passions. And the organizers of the event had no idea that I was extremely opposed to one of her policies around 1080 poison, yeah. And that I was going to get up on stage and basically do a 10-minute poem directly challenging this political figure while she had to sit there on stage in front of an audience listening to it and making eye contact with me. And it was interesting because I was involved in a lot of anti-poisoning campaign work at that time here in Golden Bay, where to protect our waters, our drinking waters and all that. And I felt like that was the act that actually landed with people the most. Like, I had people coming up to me on the street thanking me for that poem.
Mm-hmm.
It really seemed to ignite something in people, because we so rarely have the opportunity to tell politicians what we think and have them have to listen because they have to sit there. So, it was a nerve-wracking experience. But I think, that what you said about risk, I think when we see each other stand up and take a risk, I'm sure there's people who've taken a risk that inspired me to do something. There's, people tell me some of my poems are brave, and I go, ha, there's poets who are so brave whose courage inspired me.
Mm.
So it's like we're all these, candles, when one voice ignites and risks, it inspires others. And that's not just about being one voice.
And do you think that by delivering it in poetry form, it landed with more gravity than if it was just a, this is what I think, maybe?
Totally. I mean, I have no idea how it landed with the parliamentary commissioner for the environment. But, often in activism, we talk about, our audience isn't actually the person we're confronting. Our audience is all the people who are going to watch the video and go, right.
Totally.
Like, what I believe is important, what I feel is important. Like, we need to keep speaking the truth. And this person's reminded me that we can speak our truth and be brave.
Yeah, totally agree. You've released several albums. Could you share with us how each of these bodies of work reflects the different stages in your journey, do you think?
Sure. Well, yeah, each one's been different, really.
Yeah.
I've released 5 albums at this point. 2 of them are live recordings and 3 of them are studio recordings. And they're all in collaboration with musicians. I really love the interplay between poetry and music. So often, most of the time when I do longer performances, it's with some sort of musical collaboration. And I've collaborated with a lot of amazing live musicians over the years. And I feel like music gives space for the poems to breathe and gives people time to digest and between the words. And just attunes us all to something resonant that's beyond what words can do. So, each of the poems has had various musical inspirations, depending on my collaborators, but they've also had thematic inspirations. So, for example, like the most recent one, Changing My Mind, which we just released this year, and this is by far the most detailed studio album that I've done. We did it in an amazing recording studio over in Colorado with all this vintage audio gear to get really good sound. Really amazing musicians, but the poems anyway, the inspiration is quite different from my other albums. It's interesting when it feels like the world is on fire that this is probably my least explicitly activist album, But in some ways it still feels activist because it's more about nurturing our souls, and goodness knows we need that. And in recent years, my career path really shifted. I was living with a chronic illness for many years. It made it quite hard to perform and get on stage, actually. And then I went through a massive healing process where I learned to retrain my own nervous system. So changing my mind, the album is really inspired by that, knowing that we all have the capacity, actually, when we have the right tools and support, to heal like so much within ourselves and change the way that we function. And we've just been living in these systems that don't always support that. So I was given a lot of tools and support, and then ended up becoming a craniosacral therapist, a hands-on healing practitioner, and also a meditation teacher. And so, so this last album was really inspired by, healing and reconnecting us to who we really are, and belonging, gratitude, and learning to journey through our feelings and thoughts and choose who we want to be. So, that's really the... that album was, all those things were already there in the poetry, but it really coalesced with this project.
And I saw you've recently done a concert with Tim, is that right? With regards to the Waters?
Tim Firkin, he is an amazing, an activist. He's been very involved in the campaign to protect the waters in here in Golden Bay, particularly with the... the threat of the gold mine at Sam's Creek that's been proposed by Iron Gold, this Australian mining company. But the concert that we just did actually didn't have anything to do with that. But there is a lot of sacredness of the waters. Yeah. Our first collaboration came through a benefit gig for that cause.
Right.
And so I had a poem about the waters, and we did a collaboration because... Tim's an amazing musician as well, and plays hand pan and various related resonant instruments. They're so gorgeous with the poetry. So then that was so beautiful. The poem was called Orowai, Living Waters. And then out of that, we decided to do a whole concert that was really special.
Beautiful. Yeah, he's a beautiful soul with that makes beautiful sound. And really good films as well. I hope to speak to him soon. From a practical standpoint, how do you get your poetry out into the world? And what sort of strategies have you been found most effective in sustaining an audience?
Well, that's probably the trickiest part. You know, I would love to just be an artist and have someone else do all that. I think a lot of people who aren't artists don't realize how much, like, admin there can be involved in being an artist. I'm trying to get better about sharing things on social media. Sometimes the things that have gone more viral were things that I had no idea would resonate, like that poem at Tipapa that you were mentioning. I know it's often through live performance, you know, people see me and then they want to stay connected. So the tricky part is really just getting out to places and helping people get the message that this is medicine that they want. Because I like to joke that I'm world famous in Golden Bay because I live here and people watch me over the years. So no trouble getting a huge turnout to a gig because people know me. But going out in the world is tricky, you know, the promo and all that. So I'm often really, I love doing like festivals because those bring in my people friends sometimes have organized house concerts and using like our mycelial networks so that people realize that this is something good that they want to connect with. My main aspiration for financial success is because I want to have a personal assistant and not worry about all that one day.
I have a few artist friends who've recently employed personal assistants, and it's been quite transformative for them, which is really lovely to see. Also, there's a little plug. There's an open mic for spoken word stuff happening at the Revite on Saturdays now, over here, which is where I intend to break the seal of me talking in public like that. But anyway,
Love open mics, where I got my start, so wonderful.
Great. In a world sort of saturated with digital noise, what do you think poetry offers that other forms of communication can't, do you think?
Well, you know, I noticed at this recent gig we did, like, people were just, people just were so grateful. And I feel like particularly live performance for me offers, we create this container together where it's like something is arising in the people that then feeds me to feed back to them. Mm-hmm. And it's this, it's this real co-creative organism that, I love, like, all my stuff's online, and it's a great way for people to listen to it. And also there's something so special about these live experiences that, I think we'll never get from these little devices. We need to connect. It's how we evolved. Poetry was spoken word before it was a written word.
And
I feel that it's in our DNA to connect in these ways, really.
And do you have any advice for people who are sort of stage nervous about what they need to, what's helpful to think about when you get on stage to read your poetry or do spoken word?
I used to be nervous. I still am a little nervous, but not to the full extent of nervous that I was. You know, one of my favorite spoken word poets, Andrea Gibson, who recently passed away, they used to have panic attacks and they talked publicly about I'd have panic attacks and huge stage fright. And they're like one of the best best known spoken word poets in the world. So it's okay to be nervous. It's a feeling. And and the key is to be more loyal to knowing that there's something beautiful that wants to come through you, and that if I let the fear and all the difficulties win, then no one gets to hear that medicine.
Totally.
And it would actually be quite selfish, and I believe we all have something to share.
That's been really helpful. I'm going to take that with me. Do you see poetry as a way to re-enchant or reconnect with something we've forgotten, perhaps?
Absolutely. Yeah, I have on that new album, there's a line, I'm trying to remember here, where I say, if I never forgot, I'd never make poems, because I'd never need a treasure map to find my way home. So, that's what the poems are for me. They're treasure maps. Like, they're things that I need to hear and remember. And so it's kind of this cool benefit when I find out that often other people need to hear the same things. It's things that we forget, but that we can remember. And,
totally.
It's great that we don't have to do that on our own. And poems are, it's often not really about telling somebody something new, although I do like to put like cool little scientific facts or whatever in there. But the general sense of, I think, why they land with people is because it's reconnecting us to something that we already know on a deeper level that we're really hungry to reconnect with.
Yeah, on the few occasions I've shared my poetry recently, to have people comment going, that made me cry. I mean, like, there's something there, and that, as somebody who's made something, to know that it's so deeply resonated with somebody and affected them, that's all the feedback I need.
That's beautiful. Yeah, it really, I love it when people tell me they cried at a gig. It's like so much more valuable to me than applause. The tears are gold.
I just hope they're cathartic tears, not anything too traumatizing for people.
The right kind of.
And so what words of advice would you offer to younger poets or activists who want to use their creative voice to make a difference, do you think?
Just keep writing, I've written lots of terrible things that I've never shared with anyone. And I've got notebooks full, and keep writing, keep it flowing through, make it a practice, really commit to it. And, it can be so easy to, I'm very susceptible to perfectionism, And it can be so easy, you know, we live in a very achievement-oriented society. There's so much judgment, you know, how many likes did someone get? It's so important to just, like, disconnect from all that in the creative process. And I think write for yourself, right? What makes you happy, write what needs to come through you. And because you're human, it will probably resonate with someone if you commit to your truth.
Yeah, and I also often say about perfection is the enemy of done. And I think we can get so caught up in perfection that we just, it incapacitates ourselves.
So, yeah. Relatable. Yeah. It was really funny calling my album Changing My Mind, because then I was changing my mind about all the little details, which wasn't the mind changing that I meant to be talking about. But I really believe that every life experience is a training, so often I get the medicine in the process of creating as well.
Wonderful. And is there anything that's, what's the most important lesson that your journey has taught you, do you think?
Most important lesson.
That you're comfortable to share.
We all have medicine in us.
Yeah.
We all have capacity for healing and so much wisdom. And sometimes it's really about, not about thinking up the answer, but actually about getting out of the way to let earth medicine come through us and touch each other. And I believe we all are different vessels and different ways of channeling that. And so I just feel so really privileged every time I get into a space where I'm able to open up and have that come through and touch people. Then it's like, okay, yeah, this is what I'm alive for.
Yeah. Is there anything else you'd like to add before we...
I don't think so. Yeah, I'm happy to have these chats. It's fun to... it's fun to ponder the creative process together, and yeah.
And what are you working on next?
Well, I think that everyone will find out about it when I'm ready to share that.
Sorry to put you on the spot like that.
But I like to, you know, keep things closed when they're germinating. In the meantime, you know, we just put out this album, Changing My Mind, this year. So I'm actually just sitting here right now amongst lots of postage stuff and boxes, because I'm still working on getting all the crowdfunding rewards out to everyone. We did a massive campaign on Pledge Me to fund the album, and then I consider it like my duty to be a good steward of my creations. Right. So looking forward to doing more gigs, to get we made a poetry book that goes along with the album as well. So traveling around, sharing the poems, getting those out into people's hands is definitely one of my next creative visions.
Wonderful. And where can listeners find your work and support your projects and connect with you?
In pretty much all of the usual places that one might expect to find someone online. So my name is Redwood Rider. The surname is R-E-I-D-E-R. And the first name is Redwood, like the tree.
Wonderful.
And I have very mixed feelings about streaming services because of the lack of compensation for artists. However, with this recent album, we just decided to put in all of them finally, because I just want people to hear it. And so you can find the album on all the various most of the streaming services online. I'm also super grateful when people go find it on Bandcamp and purchase and download the album, because that's what actually supports us to keep doing this stuff. And the Bandcamp page is Redwood the Poet. That's all one word. redwoodthepoet.bandcamp.com.
Totally.
And I'm trying to get better about doing social media, Instagram, posting little snippets of poems and videos and whatnot. So folks are welcome to come find me there. Sort of the more that people resonate, the more I get inspired to share.
Well, thank you so much for your time today, Redwood. And everybody head over to Bandcamp.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for lending us your ears. You can find more interviews and how to request a Hearth Tale featuring your favourite New Zealand artist, maker or creative soul on our website, hearthtales.com. and you can listen to this episode of Hearth Tales on freshfm.co.nz with a new show every fortnight. Until next time, fare thee well, friends. Fare thee well.
The podcast you just listened to was a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast on Fresh FM with support from New Zealand On Air. Fresh FM is a community access media station based in Te Tauihu, the top of the South Island, New Zealand. The funding of Access Media makes these podcasts possible. To find similar programs by other community access media stations, go online to accessmedia.nz. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, freshfm.net, for our contact details.